Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for Tuesday, December 20th. I'm Alan Chartok. Today, our guest is economist and WAMC commentator Michael Mirapol, professor emeritus at Western New England University, also the co-author of Principles of Macroeconomics, Activist versus Austerity Policy. The son of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, Michael and his younger brother Robert are urging President Obama to pardon their mother before the Democrat leaves office. In the 1950s, the elder Rosenbergs were convicted and executed for spying. Michael will weigh in on those efforts and the economic policies of the incoming Trump administration. This hour, we welcome your calls. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email the show at voxpop@wamc.org. Your calls and emails coming up right after the news. Hello, hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Today our guest is economist and WAMC commentator Michael Mirapol, professor emeritus at Western New England University. He's also co-author of Principles of Macroeconomics, Activist versus Austerity Policy. Now, Mike is the son of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg. Michael and his younger brother Robert are urging President Obama to give their proclamation exonerating their mother before the Democrat leaves office in the 1950s. The elder Rosenbergs were convicted and executed for spying. Michael will weigh in on these efforts and the economic policies of the incoming Trump administration this hour. We welcome your calls, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Well, Mike Mirapol, welcome back as always. You're convinced that your mother really was innocent.
Absolutely. The evidence that has been accumulating for the last 40 years makes it very clear that the evidence presented at the trial was perjured. The person who said it at the trial, David Greenglass, my mother's brother and the chief prosecution witness, admitted in 2001 that he had lied. But we then, just two summers ago, in the summer of 2015, we got proof of it because his grand jury testimony, which had been sealed for over 60 years, was finally released. And lo and behold, the testimony he gave at the trial was totally absent from his grand jury testimony. Even more so, he very explicitly said, "I never spoke to my sister about any of this."
Your father, of course, you believe was guilty.
Yes, guilty of the technical charge of conspiracy to commit espionage. But the charge that is in the public's mind, stealing the secret of the atom bomb, placing our nation's very survival in jeopardy, we believe that my father was not part of that because he was out of the loop. It's a little bit complicated, but I'll say it very quickly. In January 1945, he was fired from his government job because the government learned that he was a communist. The Soviets, however, feared that they were on to his activities on their behalf, so they shut him down. In effect, they gave him a pink slip. And he wasn't involved in any of that activity for over a year. And it's during that year that David Greenglass drew a sketch, gave it to the Soviets. My father wasn't involved, we believe.
1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. I know you're going to want to ask Michael Mirapol a question or two about this. But in the meantime, let's go to some economic questions. Michael, Hillary Clinton got 3 million more votes about than Donald J. Trump did. And yet I am seeing cabinet picks that are, to put it mildly, retroactive.
Yeah, that's the saddest thing about it. I mean, a lot of the people, particularly in the Rust Belt, working people who voted for him, people who had supported Bernie Sanders, people who had voted for Barack Obama in 2008 and 2012, they voted for Donald Trump not because they wanted to keep all Muslims out, not because they approved of the fact that he would grab women inappropriately. They did it because they thought he might drain the swamp in Washington, bring back their good jobs.
But
he appoints somebody to the Labor Department who opposes the minimum wage. He appoints a billionaire, ExxonMobil CEO, to conduct foreign policy. He appoints the Secretary of Education, who has spent her life and her fortune trying to destroy public education, and in fact had virtually destroyed the school system in Detroit, when it was charterized. He has been appointing people who will do the exact opposite of what many of his working class voters want. They did not vote to privatize Medicare. And yet that's going to be one of the first things that Paul Ryan and the Republicans in Congress are going to send him. Now, what's Trump going to do? He's promised to protect Medicare. He needs to be held to that promise or—
How do you hold him?
Good question. You don't hold him because he does what he wants. He knows now that it doesn't matter what public opinion says. He was one of the least popular candidates in history, and he won. He won, of course, because of the Electoral College, not because the people wanted him.
1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. So is there a possibility in your mind? You've watched a lot of history, you and I together. Is there a chance that this guy could be impeached for violating the Emoluments Clause or for his work?
The only way that would happen is if he does not do what the Republicans want, or, this is a possibility, if he gets people overseas mad, people who have stuff on him from the various hacking jobs they've done. So if he doesn't toe the line that Vladimir Putin would like him to toe, it's possible that Putin has stuff on him. If he doesn't support the various things that the Republicans in Congress want, it's possible they will tire of him. But my guess is no. My guess is he's serving his 4 years.
Your father, of course, is accused of having leaked, documents to the Soviet Union. We now see Vladimir Putin is the president of Russia, the Russian Federation, except that he's a KGB colonel. I'm sorry, I'm trying to bring it all together. Is there something in your head about all of this?
Well, it is kind of interesting, but you could make the argument. Not that I would make it, but you could make the argument if you were supporting what Trump wants to do that, hey, Franklin Roosevelt and Winston Churchill made common cause with one of those bloodthirsty dictators in the world, Stalin, in order to defeat something worse, Hitler. You could be a Trumpy and say that Vladimir Putin should be our ally against Islamic terrorism. And we should side with him and Assad in Syria to defeat ISIS. And we should side with him in the rest of the world to defeat Islamic terrorism, because that's a more dangerous threat. And maybe we should side with him to isolate and contain China, because China is the real danger. I'm not saying this is accurate. I'm not even saying that Trump has the discipline to think things through that clearly. But one could make that case, right?
1-800-348-2551. Ladies and gentlemen, what is going on here? I don't see a single phone ringing. Now, that could mean one of two things. One, that the phones aren't ringing, that the phones aren't working. Two, that you don't want to call. But if you want to call, we'd love to have your participation in this. We have our old friend Mike Maripol, Professor Emeritus at Western New England University. You taught at John Jay College for a while.
Absolutely, right? Yes. It was a lot of fun. I know you did, too.
I did, and it was really wonderful. Was your experience with police officers in any way revelatory to you?
Well, guess what? John Jay's changed a lot since you worked there. I think I had one police officer in
really?
All the classes I taught. The police department basically goes to John Jay to get PhDs. It's now a straight liberal arts four-year college serving, I think, 120 different nationalities in the city of New York. It is absolutely impressive, so impressive, to stand in front of a classroom and see that rainbow of kids and the various first languages that are spoken by all those kids. And let me tell you something about the John Jay kids.
Yeah.
They are the kids who graduated from New York City high schools and went to a four-year school as opposed to a community college. So they are the creme of the creme. They are incredibly motivated. They care desperately about their work. They also have jobs. Many of them have children. It was an honor, an absolute honor to teach them.
It's interesting because I was there a long time ago, and it was established for police and corrections officers, but they had a choice. They could go in the morning or they could go at night. and you taught the same class allegedly during the day. But when the kids were there in the morning, you needed a lot of notes and a lot. You needed to be able to say a lot because there wasn't the same kind of spontaneity there was with the cops. When you had the cops, who mostly came at night, you could say good afternoon or good evening, and they would be at you. It would be phenomenal. Okay, anyway, we're going to take a real fast call from Zach in High Falls. All right. Zach, you're on the phone. Go ahead.
Hey, Alan, thanks so much for having me on the show. It's a real honor.
Great.
I'm just so concerned about the authoritarian and clearly fascistic tendencies of Trump and all of the warning signs that seem to point in a very dangerous direction. And what I'm really concerned about is why has the Democratic leadership been so silent about it? It seemed like a lot of the pushback and the opposition has been, you know, coming from the from academics and students and just, you know, protesters on the, who are more on the maybe the margins of the Democratic establishment. But, you know, Hillary's silence has been resounding. As has been many other people in Democratic leadership. It seems like the party is in such a state of disarray, and I think people need to be, you know, sounding the alarm bells. This seems like a very, very dangerous direction that the country is going in.
Okay, Mike, real quickly, and then we're going to take a break.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with the caller more. It's absolutely essential that the Democratic Party act as an opposition. Just think of the role reversal. What if Hillary Clinton had won the Electoral College and lost the popular vote? Trump people would be screaming their heads off. They'd be in court. They'd be demonstrating. There would be a grave danger that they would disrupt the inauguration. Now, there will be demonstrations all over the country, the day of inauguration and the day after inauguration. But what really should happen is that the Democratic Party leadership should basically say, this is an illegitimate president. We will do nothing to facilitate his being president. We will do everything we can to stop his appointments from being confirmed. And that is going to be the case, and we will fight like tigers and then hopefully take it to the country in 2 years and nationalize the congressional election of 2018 as a referendum against Trump. That's what the Democrats should do. I am not optimistic that they will do it.
We're going to take a short break, 7-8 seconds. We'll be right back, everybody. So hold on there.
Support for WAMT comes from Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing, careersintransitionllc.com. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings, henyonbakery.com. Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts, a family-owned business for over 50 years. BoydenandPerrin.com. Curtis Lumber, featuring Great American Kitchen, Wellborn Cabinets and Cambria Quartz Countertops, 100% American-made products by American workers. Sold locally by Curtis Lumber, CurtisLumber.com. The 1850 House Inn and Tavern, a proud supporter of the Hudson Valley Food Bank, now accepting donations. The1850House.com. And the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting The Wizards of Pop, an exhibition of original pop-up book designs by Sabuda and Reinhardt through December 30th, arkellmuseum.org.
And we are back with our pal Mike Maripol, economist, WMC commentator, professor emeritus at Western New England University, co-author, Principles of Macroeconomics, Activist versus Austerity Policy, and by the way, the son, one of the two sons of Ethel and Julius Rosenberg. All right, let's go to Jamesis in Hudson. All right, you're on, sir.
Yeah, that would be me. I'm sorry, it's James.
James.
I'm just going to ask you, because you have a lot more, of course, the fire trucks going by in Hudson, because that happens in 5 minutes. Is it wrong? I get a lot of criticism from people that I should just not
You're busting up, James. Unfortunately.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on. I'm going to try to hold the phone closer. Is that better?
Yes. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I get a lot of criticism for people that I shouldn't. Bad. Angry.
Okay, James, we have now lost James. I'm sorry, James.
Wow.
But his question was, because, you know, we take it down, is it wrong to hate fascism, for whatever that means? But so I want to change the question, Mike, if I can, for you for just 1 second, say, is this country going fascist?
Let's hope not. Let's certainly hope not. But it is important to understand that democracy is fragile. It hangs by a thread. There are certain norms that you follow in democracy. For example, when the Supreme Court gave the presidency to George W. Bush, Al Gore got up in front of the cameras and said, I profoundly disagree with what the Supreme Court has done, but I have to respect it. And when he had to count the electoral votes, there were members of Congress who objected. And because there was nobody from the Senate who joined the House objection, he had to overrule the objection by some House members. He said, he shrugged his shoulders and said, hey, and basically what he was saying is, that's the price we pay for living in a nation of laws. Sometimes the law does things we don't like.
Okay, Mike, but here's the problem. You get a Trump who puts a corporate elite into office, or he puts generals in. So now we've got a military industrial complex, if there ever was one. And I'm concerned because he said before the election that the elections would be rigged. Then it turns out the elections weren't rigged, according to him, although there are people who think they were rigged.
I'll tell you how they were rigged. This is very important. Getting people off the ballots. There were enough people thrown off the ballots, in my opinion, inappropriately in states like North Carolina and Michigan to make the difference. This election was stolen. It just wasn't stolen by hacking the voting machines. It was stolen by inappropriately getting people off the rolls.
But I wanted to go back to my point. My point is, first you say it's going to be rigged, then it wasn't rigged, then you appoint a bunch of generals and a bunch of very top corporate people and deniers into these places. Then in 2020, when he runs again, he takes a look and he sees, as you suggest before, there's a reaction to my presidency. They don't like it. Therefore, I'm going to say it's going to be rigged again. And if it's rigged again, this time he's president. And he says, and this is what I worry about, sorry, you know, we can't have this election because it's going to be rigged. And generals, so what do you think about this?
There's no question that those are possibilities. Look, you and I know a little bit of history. And in 1934, there was a group that was formed called the Liberty Lobby. And these were people who were absolutely apoplectic about what Roosevelt was doing. And they approached a Marine general, General Smedley Butler, and they asked him to organize a military coup. And he went on TV, radio, and exposed them. And that's why it didn't happen. It will require tremendous vigilance on the part of citizenry and tremendous patriotism on the part of the military and the police.
And I'll add a third, individual courage. Because if people don't have courage to speak out right now, I was talking this morning about a guy who called me. He said he had given $20 to Hillary Clinton, and he was afraid they were going to come after him.
Yeah, well, the only way to stop that is to stand with everybody else. One of my favorite comments was a gentleman from the ADL, who, when there was this talk about a Muslim registry, he stood up and he said, the day they ask Muslims to register, this proud Jew will register as a Muslim. Those are the kind of things that have to happen.
Okay. Now, let's see. We'll go to Greg in Saratoga also. Greg, you're on. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, gentlemen. I had a comment and then sort of I wanted your observation. I had a grandfather who was a wobbly. He's a member of the International Workers of the World during the early 1900s, and he was accused of being a bomb thrower in the mills there down in Pennsylvania. Basically, he was an idealist, and as the Wobblies were, they were trying to do away with the child labor and with the accidents in the factories and so forth. And my grandmother was a Communist Party member. And then on the other side of the family, I had immigrants who were from Russia also, and they were being watched, and they were on lists during the 1960s. And then we traveled in Russia as tourists with my parents, and the Russians accused my father of being a spy. So I've seen both sides of the story, and basically my observation is people are people. The Russian people, you know, were very friendly to us as Americans. I've met many Russians, and I'm very friendly to them. But the governments have been in opposition. I also had an aunt who worked for the UN who used to do translations of these Russians coming over, giving speeches at the United Nations. And the view that I had growing up was we needed to work together. Our countries had a lot of similarities, and we were really that was my view. But I've never seen that come to fruition, and this spying is nothing new either. You know, we've been spying
Greg,
on each
hey,
other.
Hey, Greg, I'm going to hold you up there and get a little reaction to what you said already from Mike Maripol.
Yeah. So, I mean, this stuff is nothing new, and what's going on? Is anything ever going to change or what?
Well, one thing is very interesting, and I think that this was rather significant. After World War II, these countries ended up with atomic weapons. And because of that, they determined that they had to figure out a way not to go to war. It's probably the first time when two imperial powers with conflict in the world didn't ultimately end up at war. It happened in the Napoleonic Wars. It happened in World War I. And World War I was just a prelude to World War II. Didn't happen with World War III because of the danger of destroying the world. So I think that was a good thing, and I think that the modus vivendi that the Soviet Union and the United States ended up with in the 1960s and 70s was a good thing. Now we have a situation where the world is a lot more unstable, and that's the thing that's scary. The world is very unstable, and mistakes could happen that would create the situation that none of us want. So we have to hope that reason prevails and that people are a lot smarter than they sometimes seem to be on the surface. I know that's a pie-in-the-sky view, but the alternative is, you know, go dig a giant hole and wait for the bomb to fall.
Okay, Greg, thank you. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Mike, your father was a spy for the Soviet Union. Why did he do that?
Well, there are two things. First of all, he believed that communism was the wave of the future. That was the solution to the world that he saw as growing up as a kid in the Great Depression with poverty and the difficulty of organizing unions where they would be broken up and, you know, heads would be smashed. And racism, he saw that firsthand. He thought the Soviet Union was a place that was being abolished. Well, he was dead wrong about that, but he was not dead wrong about the nature of capitalism. The capitalism he saw in the 1930s could not last, and in fact, it didn't last. It got replaced by the capitalism presented by Roosevelt with the New Deal. And that was a capitalism that did survive and actually prospered for decades. So he did that because he believed in socialism and communism. But also, during World War II, he did it because the Soviets were an ally. And they were, you know, being invaded by massive armies, and they were bearing the brunt of World War II. They suffered 20 million casualties. So for both those reasons, that was why he did what he did.
We'll go to Frank. Hey, Frank in Hudson Valley. Go ahead. Frank.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Good afternoon. Great show. Much appreciated. Question about the Electoral College. First, a comment. I heard you, Dr. Shartok, say that Hillary Clinton won by 3 million votes.
Almost 3 million.
And it seems to be a clamor to have the popular vote replace the Electoral College.
Yeah.
Sorry, gentlemen. My understanding from what I've read is that the Electoral College, if we refer to the popular vote, most of the candidates for the presidency would only need to concentrate on the big states, such as California, Texas, Florida, New York, and so forth, and the littler states would be neglected. And the
as they are now, by the way.
I agree, but what do you think, gentlemen, about having some sort of constitutional amendment to have the popular vote determine the presidency?
Well, it wouldn't happen. There's no way you'd get a constitutional amendment to do it. But the state-by-state compact is a very, very good possibility. Yeah. Basically, what it happens is a state legislature passes a law that says as soon as states all over the country constituting 271 electoral votes pass a law saying that the day after Election Day, that state's electors will be awarded to the winner of the national popular vote. So that means, for example, that if Pennsylvania had passed this, then even though within Pennsylvania Trump won, the national popular vote with Hillary winning would award Pennsylvania's electoral votes to Hillary. Once you get 271 votes worth of states doing it, then automatically, without a constitutional amendment, the popular vote prevails. Now, I disagree with the caller on this one thing. The campaigning would be different, but it would not only be in California, New York, and Florida. It would be in all major media markets because that's where the people are. It could be in Boston because it includes a lot of people in New Hampshire, et cetera. It could be in Detroit, Michigan, because it includes a lot of people in that area. It would certainly be in Chicago. I mean, right now, nobody campaigns in Chicago because Illinois is a blue state, just like nobody campaigns in Texas because Texas is a red state. Instead, there'd be tremendous campaigning in Houston, tremendous campaigning in Chicago. So my argument is it would be a different kind of campaign, but also even in the reddest of red states like Mississippi or the bluest of blue states like Rhode Island, a Democrat in Mississippi can try to get a few more hundred votes for the Democrat, and a Republican in Rhode Island can try to get a few hundred votes for a Republican because every one of those bloody votes will count.
That's a great answer. Thank you, Frank. Okay, let's see here. I thought we hung up on Frank. Did we not? All right, I'll try that again. Well, maybe not. Frank, you still there? No.
Good. Hello.
Who's this? Who's this?
George, okay. Happy Valley.
George from Happy Valley. I don't see you there. But okay, George, go ahead. Whatever you got to say, say it now.
Okay. Hey, Mike, we miss you here in the Happy Valley.
Where? I'm trying to remember where the Happy Valley is. Which one?
The Pioneer.
Oh, Springfield.
Springfield. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I loved living in Springfield. Visit regularly.
I see your brother periodically at events.
Okay, man, we're really up against it. Go ahead. Ask your question.
Okay, so... Mike, I disagree with you. Regarding the equilibrium in terms of the Cold War. The Cold War was cold in terms of thermonuclear war. That's true. But there are all these proxy wars going on everywhere, and they still are.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I only focused on the big one because that was the one that could have left the world uninhabitable. But you are right. A lot of people died in the Cold War.
Yeah, Cambodia, Korea.
You're right. You're absolutely
Vietnam,
right. Fair comment.
Nicaragua, et cetera, et cetera.
Very, very fair comment.
I certainly agree with you in entirety is that the Democrats are not going to stand up to the Republicans at all, and to Trump in particular. And Trump is going to get a win on public works projects. Obama's been asking for the past 8 years to do major infrastructure rebuild, and the Republicans have said no. Well, the Republicans this time around will say yes to Trump, and the Democrats will go along with it. On the other hand, the Democrats are not going to have a spine to fight anything that they perceive to be against their own short-term self-interest.
Okay. George,
on the other hand,
listen, I'm so sorry, but there are about 10 people behind you. We got to let you go. Thank you very much. Oh. Appreciate it. Okay.
Mike, take care.
Yeah.
Well, I don't seem to be having much luck in hanging things up anymore, but maybe somebody will come in from our cracked engineering department and show me how to do it. We'll go to Nathan. All right. Nathan, are you there? Nathan.
Yes. Hello.
Oh, hi, Nathan. Go ahead.
Hi, Alan. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Grew up in the Berkshires, longtime listener. Just wanted to put a quick plug in for a series I've been watching lately on the history of the U.S. and Russia since World War II. It's called The Untold History of the United States by Oliver Stone. And I think anyone who wants to be educated on these sort of topics should watch it. It's on Netflix. And I'll let you go. Thanks for taking
my call. I'm going to make a plug for that because that was a book, a full-length book that was written by Oliver Stone and this professor from Maryland. And it's a fascinating book, and it's a fascinating story. Yes, very much worth watching.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so now we're going to go to, I'm looking up the numbers of how long people have been waiting. I'm going to Maureen. All right, Maureen, you're on.
Hi, yes. I want to know if people, you know, keep talking about fascism and, you know, right. similarities. Is it way off? I mean, they keep talking about how, you know, if Trump goes too far, you know, Paul Ryan and them will, you know, reel him back. But I don't really see that. And I'm worried that Trump will go to his base. And that, since they don't trust the media anyways, that we can have, you know, things like, not Kristallnacht, but where, you know, the media, they lie and say, look at the media is lying about all this stuff and the base gets crazy. And or is that just worrying too much?
No, it's not worrying too much. That is a thing to worry about. I mean, presidency by rally is, you know, is not the way to have reasoned, thoughtful decision making. Just last summer, I went on a tour of Nuremberg, Germany, and we went to the great grounds where they held the Nuremberg rallies, and we saw a film about how they would organize it with thousands of people doing the cooking and thousands of transport vehicles, etc. And, you know, hopefully it won't get to that, but presidency by rally, it has an awful lot of echoes of what happened in the 1930s in Germany.
Okay, thank you.
But what can we do to stop it?
Talk, speak out, refuse to be silent, stand with your brothers and sisters. If somebody is being attacked, stand with them. Do not run away.
I make my kids too. My genes are in there. They're learning.
Great.
Thank you, Maureen. Okay, so now we will go to Mona's. Okay, let's try that. Is it Mona? Hello.
Hi, yes, it's Ramona.
Ramona, I'm so sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's fine. So kind of to a couple earlier points about the 2018 midterm elections as an opportunity for the Democrats to put more, you know, of their party into Congress to put some brakes on Trump and Republicans. What would you recommend the average citizen can do to, you know, toward that effort, especially if you're already in a blue state like New York?
Well, I think that in a blue state like New York, you have to get on Chuck Schumer's case because he is the minority leader, and you've got to tell him, show some backbone. Do not cooperate.
Right.
We do not want to cooperate. He is not our president. He's an illegitimate person. He got to be president by lying. He got to be president because of hacking. He got to be president because of the antiquated Electoral College. The majority of Americans didn't want him to be president. The majority of Republicans didn't want him to be president. So tell Chuck Schumer to have backbone. I'm a New Yorker, too. After January 21st, I'm going to be on the case with Schumer and Gillibrand. They have to use the Senate, use the filibuster, try to get a handful of Republicans to block some of the most egregious nominations because they are dangerous.
And by the way, Ramona, Mike and I lived through other times sort of like these, and it meant you had to get out there. And you had to get out there, whether it's with your banjo or your washtub bass or your voice or at a rally. You have to do it because if people get scared, that's the end.
Right.
Okay, Ramona, thank
right.
you.
Right.
Thank you. Got to go.
You know, one of the perplexing things about this election was after the do-nothing Republican Congress, people were so angry. How could Republicans still maintain their majority?
Very easy.
Very easy. Most members of the House of Representatives are almost guaranteed to win re-election.
They're gerrymandered into their seats. They drew their own. They drew their own districts. Hey, Ramona, gotta go. All right. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Gazebo, Northampton, Massachusetts, an independent lingerie shop specializing in bra and post-mastectomy fittings, providing support to the Pioneer Valley for almost 40 years, the-gazebo.com. Larac, serving the arts community year-round in downtown Glens Falls since 1972, with gallery exhibits and gift shop featuring handmade items by regional artists, larac.org. Clipcentric Albany, a local video services division of Clipcentric, producing video advertisements for businesses throughout the capital region for web, mobile, and TV. Albany.clipcentric.com. The Whistling Kettle, Troy and Boston Spa, offering freshly baked quiche with a variety of herbs and spices, including vegetarian offerings. TheWhistlingKettle.com. Fort Hill Auto Body, Amherst, Massachusetts. Locally owned and operated since 1997, providing auto body repair, detailing, painting, and glass replacement, a proud supporter of public radio. FortHillAutoBody.com. And Coldham & Hartman Architects, serving residential and institutional clients with architecture designed for resilience and renewability, designed for the next 100 years, CNHArchitects.com.
Okay, Paul in Kingston, you're on. Go ahead.
Paul?
Yes.
From Kingston, hi.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a union man. Where are the unions in all of this? Who do they back now? Where were they on behalf of your father, to the featured guest? What role will they play in the future?
Well, the unions of today, and we'll go to Mike, obviously, right now, are different from the unions before. I think the unions have to answer for a little bit of why they're so unpopular in America, but perhaps Mike doesn't agree with me.
Well, I mean, the question about my father, in the 1950s, nobody was going to support my father because he was a communist. Even if he had never been a spy, just being a communist was enough to drive people away. I mean, if you may or may not know, in 1947, Congress passed the Taft-Hartley Act that said that if you are a union official, you have to prove you're not a communist before you can actually be involved in negotiations. So the unions purged their communists after World War II, and there were a handful of left-wing unions that hung on for a while and then disappeared. As Alan says, today the union movement is a shadow of its former self. As early as the 1980s, with Reagan firing the Patco workers, it was very clear that unions were considered just one interest group. Now, I think that's outrageous, because unions are not...
I find that to be a tragedy.
No, it is a total tragedy. And part of the problem, I would guess, and this is... I'm a member of a union, or I was at the... when I worked for CUNY, the Professional Staff Congress. And they have a pretty good leadership. But a lot of times, I think leadership has gotten out of touch with their membership. They have not been willing to practice direct democracy from the shop floor up. A previous caller had a grandfather who was in the IWW. The IWW had a very cool rule. Any union official works for a year as a union official, then goes back to their regular job, so that there's no long-term bureaucracy at the top of a union. That would be a great way to begin to re-democratize American labor.
Paul, got to let you go. Thank you. Let's go to Willie in Pittsfield. All right, Willie, you're on. Go ahead.
All right. Good afternoon.
Hey.
Happy holidays to you.
Thank you.
I just want to share my opinion. You know, saying how do the outside world look at the United States now with Donald Trump, the elected president, who is a flip-flam con artist that's going to be the president. And his first lady is a Playboy bunny. And one thing I want to say about Hillary Clinton, you know, I voted for her and I was looking for her. I was getting two for one, Hillary and Bill. You know what I'm saying? And when they always bring up like Benghazi, it's always about, nobody don't think about 9/11. It was a sneak attack. Benghazi was a sneak attack. We wasn't prepared for it, but they always put it on Hillary. You know what I'm saying? And that's what I wanted to share. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what's going to happen in the future. I just pray that things going to work out. You know what I'm saying? But I just want to share my opinion, and that's my opinion. Thank you very much.
And thank you, Willie. All right.
Can I just say something?
Sure.
Please don't give up. That's the most important thing. Don't give up. Stand tall, stand with your brothers and sisters, because that is the key.
We'll go to Bruce. All right, Bruce in Kingston, you're on. Bruce, are you there? I'll try it again. Bruce in Kingston, are you there, Bruce?
Yes.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Although it's afternoon, I don't know how good it is, but when Donald Trump, several weeks ago before the election, you know, actually implored Russia and Putin by name to come and hack. Why wasn't a big deal made of it? I called in about this. Now they're making a big deal of it. He should have been brought up on treasonable charges then. now the party, the Democratic Party, and the newspapers and, you know, the media are making a big deal. Why wasn't something done about it before? And also, I agree with Professor Mayapol about the voter suppression, but that's being done regularly. Why wasn't something said about that before?
Well, now, what exactly, Bruce, would you have done to Donald Trump for having said, I hope they keep hacking, which, of course, he would say was just kidding around. Isn't there freedom of speech somewhere here?
Well, at least they could have highlighted it and talked about it a lot in the
media.
Well,
they did. Come on now, they did. We all heard about it. How'd you hear about it? You hear about it through the clouds?
Alan, yeah. You did talk about it, but very little was done about it compared to what's being done now. A lot more could have been done.
I think here's my take on that. I think that the media and the Democratic establishment were so confident that Hillary was going to win that they didn't think they needed to do anything. Now, suddenly, they wake up the day after Election Day, and horror of horrors, Trump has won. Now they're making a big deal about it. But as you know, it's the old joke. The horse is already out of the barn. You can't close the door now.
Thank you, Bruce. Okay. Now we'll go to Matt in Monroe. All right. Matt in Monroe, you're on.
Hi, gentlemen. So I have this theory about time and history being a giant pendulum swing between the two parties, the conservatives, the liberal end. And I'm tempted to not worry about the whole Trump presidency because of it, because it seems like when a party gets in, they push the pendulum a little further or a little less far, and then the other party comes back and pushes it the other direction, and that's, you know, democracy. Do you have thoughts?
Here's the title of the book that I wrote before the textbook, and you'll see where the thoughts are. Surrender: How the Clinton Administration Completed the Reagan Revolution. I am afraid that the pendulum swung to the right under Ronald Reagan. It did not swing to the left under Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton actually continued a lot of the Reagan policies. Then it swung even further to the right under George W. Bush. Obama made, I would consider, a half-hearted effort to reverse it. He did partially reverse it with the Affordable Care Act and with the Recovery Act, but not enough. And that's why the economy was so sluggish during the last 8 years, and why too many Obama voters, opted for Trump. So I don't think the pendulum swung very far liberal under Clinton or Obama, and it's right now it's falling off the clock because we have no idea where it's going to bounce to under Trump.
Thank you, Matt. Okay, let's go to John in Pine Bush. All right, John in Pine Bush, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I just wanted to add something I heard earlier on your station. There was a who's a professional negotiator that negotiated some of the biggest conflicts all over the world. So it's really complete polarized opposite sides. And he was able to successfully negotiate agreements among them. And what he said about the current situation we have in the country is because it's become so polarized that we don't look at particular issues. We hurl threats at either side. We act emotionally. And what he said, in order to find common ground, we have to put that aside and take higher ground and understand exactly what particular conflict there is on each issue. And that's what we need to do with Trump and the current situation. We need to look at every particular issue individually. And if there is disagreement, we need to negotiate reasonable result.
Okay, Mike. Yes. Mike, what do you say?
Well, here's the problem. The Republicans just proved over the last 8 years that you don't have to do that. They said no, no, no. They disrupted. They said no, no, no. When they got a majority, they refused to go along with any of the things Obama wanted to do. They even broke precedent by refusing to even hold hearings on a Supreme Court nominee, and it worked. So because it worked, it will be tried again, the next time Republicans are in the minority. But now they're in the majority. They're just going to steamroll everything. They will have no reason to negotiate with Democrats over anything.
Thank you, John. Okay, 1-800-348-2551. We're reaching the end of the show, folks. We can take one or two more calls here. Let's go to Emily in New Paltz. Okay, Emily in New Paltz.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just have a question. If everyone, I can't stand Trump, and I think he's dangerous, and I agree with everything horrible you've said about him. But my question is, what do you think can be put in place in the future so that someone like Trump couldn't possibly finagle his way, hack his way, lie his way into office? I mean, that's what he did. I agree that that's what he did, and I agree that he's a pitiful candidate and he shouldn't be president. So what can change in the system so that he can't do this again?
I don't think anything can change in the system, but what I do think is people can change. And this gives me an opportunity to say something I've been wanting to say this whole time. What can we as individuals do? Alan and I have been talking about speaking out, demonstrating, writing letters, putting pressure on members of Congress. But there's a personal thing that every one of us can do, and I've resolved to try to do that myself. No matter where you live, you could live in a blue estate, Rhode Island, you could live in the red estate, Mississippi, you could live in a battleground state, Pennsylvania. You come across, whether it's people that you work with or people that are coaching your son's little league team or people that you cut your grass, or if your son cuts somebody else's grass, you know people who voted for Trump. Take the time to, in an extraordinarily respectful way, talk to that person. Why did that person vote for Trump? Explain why you think, in a very rational way, he is a grave danger to the United States and to the world, and to the self-interest of many people who voted for him. You may not succeed, but try it. Because A, it's a worthwhile effort, and B, you might actually succeed.
Okay, thank you for that. All right, we are really reaching the end of the show now. So I do want to go to, let's see here, Jerry on the Thruway. Jerry, can you hear us? Jerry.
Hello.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jim.
I'll make it as quick as I can.
All right.
For 40 years, I thought Trump was a buffoon and a P.T. Barnum of real estate. Having said that, I think Trump didn't win. I think the elite Democrats and the elite Republicans alienated their base, and they lost. I think Trump himself is irrelevant until the old Republicans and the old Democrats look at themselves, where we've lost control of what's happening with the country. And all of the talk you've had on the show so far is going to hurt you more than help you. You've got to look not at Trump. Look at what Democrats have done wrong. The Republicans may or may not look at what they did wrong. But Trump didn't win. Hillary and Jeb and the rest of them all lost, and they did it to themselves. That's my thought.
Okay, Mike?
Very, very briefly, I do agree that the Democratic Party needs to take a good, hard look at itself. And perhaps one of the major things they should look at is the idea that somehow you can make the nation prosperous by balancing the budget. But in fact, that's a prescription for austerity. The working class has been given austerity for umpteen years. They revolted against it. Until the Democrats get rid of falling in love with austerity, the Democrats will continue to lose.
And that's always been the premise of your economics work, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I thank you for calling. Okay, so now we can take maybe one more call, but really fast because we're absolutely out of time. We'll go to Mike in Bennington. All right, Mike in Bennington, you got to keep it real short. Go ahead.
Hi, yes, I want to know how your guest has dealt with the burden of having his the Rosenbergs suffered such a grave fortune? How's he been able to deal with it in his own life? And what does he think of prospects for nuclear war or disarmament?
Okay. I can only say to you, we are absolutely out of time now, Mike. We can't even begin to do justice to that. However, I did just do a half an hour with Mike on that very subject, which will be, I believe, on the round table tomorrow.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And it'll be about a half an hour. So if you go to WAMC.org, round table, I think you'll see it. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, so we are out of time. I want to apologize to Ellen from Saratoga Springs, Kay from Oneonta, Howie from Bennington, Dan from Eastern New York, Tori from Glenville, and Tom from Albany. We are out of time, my dear friends. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York, Custom Exhibits, Interactive Kiosks, and Commercial Casework for Special Events, Museum Installations and Trade Shows, EmpireExhibits.com. Vision, Excel, Eye Care, Lake Katrine, Exams, Eye Care, Dry Eye Therapy, and now New American Made Frames, where eyewear is an art. VisionExcelEyeCare.com. Mango Tree Imports, a global fair trade show in downtown Saratoga Springs, New York, featuring artisans' goods from more than 60 countries. MangoTreeImports.com and Facebook. And Tom McRae, Edward Jones Financial Advisor on University Drive, Amherst, Massachusetts. Member SIPC, Edward Jones, making sense of investing, edwardjones.com/Tom McRae. Again, everybody, thanks for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been the astounding Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Louise Butler. Terrific. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Shartok. Thank you, Mike Maripol. Stay tuned now for a news update.